good afternoon, planet Earth, because technically it's just afternoon. It's 12:16 p.m. on the Olympic Peninsula, staring bleakly towards the west. No, the east. Yes, my window faces east, I think. Faces towards the slouching beast, approaching from the desert strong. Because it is June the 24th, 2026, and it's your good friend Dan, thought I'd give you some personal updates because I'm a shithead. I'm still looking for work. I'm open to lots of different types of gigs, and I would love to make money off the t-shirt thing, and I haven't given up hope on it, mainly because of all my artistic endeavors, or did I say autistic? Artistic. I mean both. Of all my endeavors, I think the t-shirt thing has been the most fun for the amount of effort required. And I've sold a few, and I've gotten a couple compliments, and people do stare. And if that's not a good brand, getting people to stare at you, I don't know what is. Go ask Winnie the Pooh. Yeah, go ask Winnie the Pooh, fucker. Ask Winnie the Pooh. What a fucked up name. Anyways, still looking for work. I'm going to probably apply at some of the local stores. I had an opportunity a few weeks ago, but it turned out to not be a good idea because I don't have a car. And it would have been one of those jobs where you really would need a car. So I couldn't do that one. But if I can just get another job in addition to the stuff I'm doing at the high school, which doesn't pay a lot. It's not technically full-time. It's 36 and a half hours, which for the 3.5 hours they don't pay you, you'd say, well, then you must be making bank still, and I'm not. It's even if they paid you the additional hours, it's just not very much money. And listen, I have a hard time complaining too much because I have food, water, shelter. I don't have anybody that depends upon me right now, really. So I'm lucky, right? But I am looking for some type of part-time gig, maybe as a hooker queen, maybe as a pimp lord. If Bo Blimp Doc continues, we have to rename it. It'll be Ho Blimp Doc, the new age of sexy. So I'm still looking for work. Probably not as a hooker or a stripper. Those years are behind me. I don't have the money to pay for the technology to turn me to Cock Judson yet. But if I do get the money, I'll go on that horse hormone they only give to the elite. And I'll have all kinds of stem cell enhancements. And they'll put in the Dr. Torpedo Head Part 3 that you can only buy in Japan. Thank you very much. And, you know, I can, but that's a lot of money. That's a lot of lettuce right there. That's all the GLP ones and sixes. That's all the liposucks. That's all the reverse embryology. Not to mention all the blood you have to buy. You don't ask where it came from because you're looking out for yourself, right? Don't ask where that blood comes from, baby. As far as the world goes, I wouldn't have any good advice for you. I will mention one other thing. Well, let's just talk about the world. It looks fucked up. It's hard to believe the Strait of Hormuz, Iran thing is real. And in some ways, okay, you got to follow me on this. But it's almost like this year's dancing nurses are those fucking Lego videos. I mean, I kind of like them, But then again, I also kind of liked the nurses all hooker-like dancing with their jumblies. The heroes, right? The heroes of 2020, the pandemic that couldn't stop construction in Little Saigon, Seattle, or keep them from tearing down a homeless shelter, but, and also, you know, didn't really have any issues with major routes being cut off by Antifa. The magical pandemic of 2020. These Lego videos have that Sovietological psyop feel of the fucking dancing nurses. And there's more than one version of this. Like, it's not that the dancing nurse thing is the only repetitive, mimetic psyop structure that we were fed in 2020, but it was in its own way very powerful, because what they're trying to do is a lot like that Bon Jovi song that came out of nowhere and had a really decent sort of 80s music video about you gotta do what you gotta do and just be a slave. In fact, it should have been called Arbeit macht frei. But the point is, the Lego thing, yes, it's AI, and yes, it's imperfect enough to look like, okay, it's got to be AI. I know enough about how it generates stuff to know this. But at the same time, it seems too, I don't know, it seems too real to be this real. It sounds dumb, but it's kind of like what Elon Musk said once, which means I should reject what I just said. But in some ways, it doesn't seem real. Like, it seems too tailor-made. You know, it's like the police when they use that term, that concept of an orgy of evidence, where a whole bunch of circumstantial evidence is dumped someplace. Well, maybe that's a stupid criminal, or maybe it's somebody being set up, you know? And maybe the person being set up is you. See, that's my point. The types of military psychological warfare they've been practicing since at least 2020. And arguably before that, I mean, arguably 9/11 was one of their big, giant, you know, proto-super projects. But 9/11 was nothing compared to 2020. I mean, 2020 was on so many levels. You needed so much orchestration to pull that shit off. Yeah. And you'd have to be very sensitive to stuff. It's like the Metro schedules in late 2019 being messed with. It seems strange to me, and I'm on the record in my podcast that I was noticing that stuff. So it's a matter of the historical record, if such things make sense in an internet age, or an age of super fakes, super fakery, you know, bullshit. Boblimtok, that's what we... Boblimtok. In an age of Boblimtok, if such things make sense. Yeah. So I'd like you to meditate on that. If I could ask a favor as one friend to another, think about the dancing nurses and think about all these fucking Iranian or whatever fellow traveler Lego videos. Because these Lego videos have the same patina or even residue of bullshit if you look close enough. And you come to realize that it's a cartoon. The thing, psyops, when it comes to trauma-based mind control and other types of influence, psyops tend to be cartoonish because, well, you really can't be too specific. If you're too specific, you end up alienating too much of the population. Your goal is to hit the big targets, not the little ones. The reality is you're playing a game of numbers. If you think of 2020 from a psyop perspective, they get an A+. Did they convince everybody? Clearly they did not, but they convinced enough people. And that's the magical number. Can you, using strategic military psychological warfare, convince people that reality is a little bit different than what they're seeing with their own eyes? I don't know. I think I met Slender Man at the library. I was going there the other day. He was a tall, gaunt gentleman, at least 120 years old. He wore a short-leaves shirt. He had on dark slacks. He had a long beard. He wore glasses. His arms were long and gangly. He had sinewed muscle that seemed unnatural to his age. His arms were too long, like monkey arms. monkey arms. He had monkey arms that he could drag, a knuckle dragger, but not quite. His legs were long. His torso was long. I think he was about 8 feet tall. 8 feet tall. You can trust an Irishman when he says he was 8 feet tall. And he was going home or going to or going on break. I wasn't sure. He had a name tag. And I think his name said Bob Boblinson. Not very creative, but if you understand what Slender Man is, and that's Slender Man, he's what's known as a slick. What's a slick? What's a slick? A super liminal, ignomatic, ignochromic, quantum umbambulator. No, a slick is an S-L-I-C-K. A slick is a creature. Technically, it would be a cryptid that is able to exist outside of human experience, which means in terms of what we can hear, what we can smell, even what we can see and touch, it doesn't really appear to be there. And if you think to yourself, well, Dan, there's no way such things could exist on planet Earth. Well, I mean, that's narrow-minded thinking. Okay, we have limits to what we can experience. We can't experience everything. Getting back to that PSYOP conversation, and again, if I can emphasize this fucking point, Lego videos equal dancing nurses, and that means you need to get off the Iran bus because wherever it's headed is not towards the truth. I'm sorry. I have to pull the plug on that one. The Ukraine war, I told you, if it lasted more than 90 days, something else was going on. You can say drone, you can say drones all day long. I was studying this shit back in the 90s and early 2000s. Please, go someplace else. This is not just about drones. If you think there weren't air defense officers 30 years ago telling people that this was coming, there were plenty. There were plenty, and they were never listened to. And guess what? People that tell the truth in the army of many things do not make a profit for the military-industrial complex. Does that help? So no, this drone thing, I don't buy it. I don't accept it. The idea that it came out of nowhere. Listen, I was reading articles on a separate subject about hypersonic weapons back in the 80s when I was in high school, okay? So how is it that somehow, with all the money we spent and then we claim to forget about, because keep in mind, I was in the Army when they were saying, oh, the Army's broke again. And the reality was, is there was like, at that time, 10 trillion maybe that could not be discovered or identified within the DoD budget, that 10 trillion unidentified, giant hole in the wall, nobody knows where it got spent. And some think that the numbers double or even triple at this point, and really doesn't matter. When you're talking about money like that, it's not really money, you know, for starters, it's fiat currency. But when you're talking about that kind of printed bullshit, does it really matter? So I don't know. It's a giant question mark. A slick is a creature. Like, imagine a creature that can move, let's just say, 100 times faster than a person. And pretend that they have a metabolism that's 100 times faster. And in reality, maybe everything about them is about 100 times faster. And imagine they're extraordinarily good at camouflage. Like, they're an octopus, basically. If they were leaning up against a tree, you couldn't see them there. And imagine, because of the way their body behaves, if you stuck your hand into them, well, they would have plenty of time to move because you're like a statue to them. But at best, you would be pressing into that person, that slick, and like a dick, it would lunge away to suck your blood another day. Imagine there are creatures that are around you all the time, and because of a combination of camouflage and the simple reality, there's no rule that says metabolism has to operate at our speed. Maybe they do have a metabolism 100 times faster than ours. We don't know because we can't see them. We try to capture them, but they move too fast. And in theory, you could say, well, Dan, we could use liquid nitrogen. Could we, though? They move pretty fast. 100 times faster. they would probably see the plume coming. And so what? You use liquid nitrogen on this see-through material. And because of the way liquid nitrogen works, it will break it down and turn it to dust and nothing, and you'll end up with nothing. Who knows? The point is, you might not be able to capture these things, and they could behave like ghosts. If you see it their way, we move really slow. And maybe they can, like, figure us out so quickly because we move so damn slow from their perspective. They're slicks. What if that's Bigfoot? What if a slick is another kind of hominid or proto-hominid? What if slicks are hominids and so they're not octopus? No, let's throw that out. Well, maybe some of them are. Because octopus can be pretty smart, and who knows? An octopus that goes 100 times faster? I don't know. Let's throw that one out. But imagine they're hominids, proto-hominids. They're primates. Primate species of slick. And this could explain the whole Bigfoot thing, too, because maybe they can let you see them. And maybe some of these slicks are big and furry, and they look like, you know, what we call a Bigfoot at this point. And maybe that explains why we can't see them or find them or shoot them or really harm them. Maybe they're angry about what we're doing to nature, but maybe they eat people. And if they eat people, do you think they care? Like a Care Bear, like My Little Pony, phony baloney. They don't care. They're not a Care Bear. Not like your little Frenchie that you cuddle up to, because all your children are grown up. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, what if they're, and this is one of those things that in science class this year, I guess I should never have been doing it, but maybe whatever, we tried to talk about one of the issues of science is what we can see. You can't record data on what you can't see or experience. You can't develop a hypothesis about what you can't see or experience within reason. Like, you could argue, well, Dan, you can surmise the existence of the atom, and this is true. But you have to have some behavior that you're sort of latching onto that indicates there is an atom. It's not just, you know, you're not just like Lucretius saying, I believe in atoms. Well, yeah, it makes a lot of sense, Philosopher Joe, but go build yourself a fucking linear accelerator, you crooked Greek son of a bitch. Maybe he was Roman Greek. I don't give a fuck. Greco-Roman. He was a Roman. Maybe. Anyways, I think that there could be creatures around us all the time, and they might not even be intelligent. They could be parasitic and simply moving at 100 times our speed. So no matter what we do, we can't really fight them off. And if they want to latch on to us, they're going to be parasitic. Now, from their perspective, their parasitism might only last a few months, maybe a few, you know, from their perspective, it might only last a few seconds. But, I mean, from our perspective, but from their, well, you know what I mean. They could be latched on for a long time and do a lot of damage, you know, they wanted to. And maybe that's why people get, you know, sick sometimes. And they can't figure out what causes it. Well, it's a slick. It's a slick. It's one of these creatures that moves really fast outside of our ability to perceive them, that they're capable of avoiding any attack because they're so fast. And they have really good camouflage. And because of that, we can't see them. There's no indication they're there. By the time we point our special device at them, they've already run away, run away, run away, little lamb. Run away. Anyways, saw the Slender Man at the library. It turns out if you hang an egg carton outside, you know, take an egg carton, not a plastic one, one of those perforated cardboard kind of contraption paper bullshit. You know what I mean? An old-fashioned papery fucking death to the man type egg carton. Not plastic, not styrofoam. It turns out if you hang an egg carton outside, you can fight back against Slender Man and other slicks. And nobody knows why. Nobody knows why. Nobody wants to figure out why. Okay? I knew a man once, and I shall not judge, but I knew a person once, many, many years ago. 20 years ago, let's say. And he was a really smart guy. I learned a lot from him. We worked in business together. It was in the healthcare world, and gotta say, working on the database side, the informatics side of healthcare can be kind of disconcerting and depressing. And let's just pull that Band-Aid off. There's a lot you don't want to know about how the healthcare system works, but it's not just clinical. It's not just about the pharma and the cutting and that. That can be bad enough, but it's financial. It's one of the reasons why when I think about what happened to me this year, when I did the bare minimum things, people said, you need to do this and you need to do that. I ended up getting these massive bills, and it occurred to me, yeah, it doesn't matter if you have health insurance. Not really. I am going to start accepting donations again. I don't like it because I feel like I only did this for about a month. And in reality, I think there are people who listen and they don't want to hear it. And that's why when I say accept donations, I'm not going to talk about it. I feel like I've done that and that's just not the right answer ever. But I will put the link in there. And if somebody wants to try to donate, they can. I truly don't know if it fucking matters. And I am getting by okay. Nobody I know is getting rich right now. Not really. A lot of people are treading water at their current state of existence. Well, we don't know anything beyond what we know right now. And what we're told about the world right now looks kind of, well, like bullshit. I'm not saying it's all bullshit. It just looks like a lot of bullshit. Anyways, to add to the bullshit, I am accepting donations again. I'll include a link, but you don't have to donate. In fact, really, if you have in the past, don't. That means no one's going to donate because I don't really get new followers, not that often. Like maybe once, one or two a year. I don't know. I am working on a way to sell my t-shirts. I'm not sure that matters, but people say, Dan, you need not give up just because the slicks are parasites and they move at hyperspeed and they're invisible to the naked eye and you can never feel them because they have no heart. The slicks are out there floating in the clean air waiting for you to go take a poo. They'll latch onto you where you make your goo. Right down there. Anyways, hang an egg carton. Alan Greenspan is dead. It's funny, I just clicked on a link and it's like, page not found. Yeah, anyways, I guess somebody removed an obituary. I have a link. Oh, you know what? I think I know what happened. Dan, that's because of you. I know it's because of me. I know it's because of me. Okay. This article comes from NBCnews.com. It was published the other day, June 22nd. That's 2 days ago. Headline, Alan Greenspan, economist and longtime pop-up ad. Longtime head of the Federal Reserve dies at 100. The powerful economic policymaker died Monday from complications of Parkinson's disease, said his wife of 29 years, NBC News correspondent Andrea Mitchell. This article is written by Daniel Arkin. You know what? I'm going to summarize this for you. Alan Greenspan contributed to a collection of essays that Ayn Rand published in the 1960s. And his contribution dealt with gold as money. I'm mentioning this because it's worth reading. I mean, essentially, here's a guy that is the architect of the postmodern monetary policy. You can say whatever you want to about Ben Bernanke, but all Ben Bernanke did was take the blueprint that Greenspan created to include how he managed the 1989 stock market debacle. If you think that was organic and natural, I've got some Velveeta to sell you. And some Tang. But you don't get oranges and real cheese. Good people get those things. He is a strange person from my perspective, because ostensibly people would say he comes from that libertarian perspective. But frankly speaking, if you look at his policies throughout his tenure, he did a lot of very spooky Keynesian bullshit. I don't know how much you guys know about the Asian flu. And it wasn't a flu, it wasn't a virus. It was a problem with people making bets. The smartest guys in the room. The year was 1997. Okay? I think long-term capital management, right? LTCM. But it could have been, it was one of these hedge fund, venture fund, we're brilliant, I'm a former physicist, this guy solved the Gödel equation, and if you believe in us, you know, you can have an internet future, because hey, look at the internet, it's brand new. The year was 1997, and they went out on a limb, and a lot of people, and this is where you get into like one of the first major events involving derivatives and things like derivatives, is they went out on a limb, but they weren't the only ones. A lot of banks, investment banks, other types of organizations went out on a limb during the 90s, and a lot of it was related to things like the yen carry trade and the ruble, which was, you know, so debased, right? Completely debased. The ruble was something you could buy for nothing and you could purchase a lot of resources with. It was actually a scheme too. It's one of the reasons why Putin arrived, folks. You might not like Putin, but the CIA stooges we gave to Russia in the 90s were way worse for the Russian people. They may have been better for us, but they were terrible for the Russian people, okay? Putin isn't ideal, but he doesn't make that mistake every day. Greenspan bailed out long-term capital management. He prevented the contagion, and this contagion theory would continue through his tenure, through the dot-com bubble, through the first echoes of what would be the housing bubble, on to Bernanke, on to Yellen, on to fucking Powell, and now we got this Warsh guy, right? Here's another fun fact about our good friend Alan Greenspan. In the 1990s, as Fed chief, he redefined some things like unemployment and inflation. And because of his redefinitions, things like, for example, food and healthcare and education, a lot of things simply don't really show up in the numbers. And if they did show up in the numbers, I don't know how to phrase it, folks, inflation would be a lot worse than what we think it is. He had this thing called the hedonic index, which again is just a phrase you develop for bullshit. But his argument was simple. Slaves, hamburger is steak. You used to be able to afford steak. You could take a steak on home. No biohazard. No bleach dome. But now you can have hamburger. Rinsed, washed, and greasy from the factory. Leavings on the shop floor for the wretched whore. Hamburger steak. Hamburger is steak, buddy. And this is what's fun, because I'm at the point now where when I go to the grocery store, I look at hamburger the way I think people back in the day who could no longer afford steak used to look at steak. He is in a way right. In his death, he is right. Hamburgers is truly now steak because it's so fucking expensive compared to what it used to be. And that's not going to get better. And so ultimately, hamburger is and will be steak. A lot of people won't be able to afford it as a protein. That's not in the distant future. It's not just because of Iran. Here's the thing, folks. If you think about Iran the way you think about a food warehouse catching fire, or a food processing plant having a fire, or a bunch of cows just suddenly dying in the middle of nowhere, these things can be partially true. it could be true that there's this giant fire in LA right now. I believe it would have to be true because LA is not like Mars. So you'd have way too many observers. So let's assume it really is going on. But what if it's empty? Like, what if there's nothing there? What if the shocker, and again, guys, you got to get over the hobo with a Bic lighter. But what if the shocker were ultimately that that whole warehouse was empty, that there was no food in it? Or that the food in it was rotten, which is just as bad. When you look at the Iran war thing, and again, I don't know if it's a war because did we declare it? Whatever it is, the Iran conflict. When you look at the Iran conflict, you kind of have to ask the basic question, qui bono? Who benefits from it? Because the Iranian people kind of benefit from it. It is leading to a pseudo normalization of some economic realities, but it's not, I don't know. That's tenuous at best. State of Israel, I don't know if they really do benefit from this. I think that maybe they were convinced they had to do it, but it's not working out for them, which means somebody with wisdom could have told them their scheme would last longer. It is a scheme. It's always going to fail. It's a terrible land grab scheme. It's a bad HOA. The state of Israel is going to fall. It's just that this ushers it on. This makes it happen faster. But who knows? There's a lot of information that little people like us do not get access to. Back to our good friend Ben Bernanke. If you needed to cover up a coming famine with some sort of event, then the Iran war is perfect. Because if I'm basically right about Boblimtok and what they're hiding, which means some sort of significant, I mean huge, you don't need to think about Al Gore or Greta Thunberg. You don't have to worry if where you end up is hothouse Earth or an ice age. Understand this. Some type of transition is occurring. And that transition will be so chaotic, it will logically and naturally lead to famines. Because most of the life forms around you, they do great in equilibrium. They do wonderful in equilibrium. They don't do so great when you get out of equilibrium. Sometimes they migrate, they can scamper like the little crab and migrate across the Arctic Sea and end up in the cooler Atlantic maybe. Maybe you can have this happen, but the reality is there are creatures that can migrate like birds and fish and other creatures. And then there are creatures that just won't do so great. Some animals that live in herds could migrate. Deer, probably, they can survive somehow. Beavers seem to be doing a comeback as the Arctic fails. And again, that makes perfect sense. That's part of what's causing the process itself. And arguably, yes, they're probably either having zero effect or a negative effect, which means they're not helping. But they are part of the process, okay? This is tens of thousands to millions of years of frozen shit and farts, if you want me to oversimplify, and it's all thawing out. And it could be generations before something like permafrost ever exists again, to include in the mountains. Like some mountain ranges might start to build glaciers again, you never know. That's hothouse Earth. But whether it's hothouse Earth or another ice age, the transition to that is going to be brutal, and a famine is baked into the cake. It's simply going to happen. You know, tell me what the Iran war has to do with what they're calling the Super El Nino. And the answer is zero. Zero. You know, name for me the last time the United States conducted a major conventional operation in the Middle East and they decided to kick off activities in early winter. Or at least, let's say late winter. Late winter. When? Never. Because basically, that means you're sending in troops in the middle of summer. Yeah, name for me that time. They never do that. They choose to avoid it. It is not a good time of year to be carrying on operations. It's why the war against Iraq in 2003 ended up becoming a problem, because ultimately they wanted it to be fast. You know, mission accomplished, right? It just wasn't fast enough. And then it became a long, dragging out process in a part of the world where it is hard to keep troops deployed certain times a year, perhaps all year long, but certainly in the summer, it's hard. So, I don't know. Dan, what's that got to do with Greenspan? Here's the deal. Greenspan did the hamburger is steak, because Greenspan understood where we were headed. We were not headed to a world where technology and free enterprise was going to allow everybody to live a better existence. That was never going to be a thing. I mean, ultimately, when you think about the petrodollar, when you think about what happened with closing the gold window, in some ways, that's not the most important event. But in the post-World War II period, closing the gold window in the early 1970s was the United States defaulting on its obligations. And what it replaced that obligation with was military force. And as, you know, Napoleon once said, there's lots of things you can do with bayonets, but you can't sit on them. So we are in a situation we're in, even if you don't think that something else is going on, we're in the situation. If you need to cover it up, why not launch a war, an absurd war, at the worst possible time, and turn it into something that has an on-off switch, which they've done. This MOU bullshit, fucking A, man. They've managed to take the 3 weeks to flatten the curve and reproduce it in the form of warfare. They can turn it up, turn it down. Oh my God, there was a recent super spreader. Oh my God, you know, people are doing better somewhere else. And up and down, up and down. Look at the guy running on the beach from the cops. You know. I saw a drone swarm and it looked like a fucking jellyfish. Yeah, that's one of those pop-up news articles. Folks, yeah, Greenspan, in my opinion, is not a good person, but that's mainly because he chose to be a bad person. He could have been a different kind of person, but he would have never been Fed chief. He might have been a person who made a deal with the devil. I don't want to get into his feelings about the state of Israel. He probably was, you know, pro-Israel, because it seems like everybody who is Jewish is, but I don't want to presume that. I don't know if he was or wasn't. Seems like, you know, he would have been. But that's not the main issue here. The main issue is the Federal Reserve has harmed this country. It is not a constitutional part of this country. It has powers greater than the Congress and the Senate and the executive. And from my perspective, other than the quote-unquote president picking the Fed chief, it doesn't have proper oversight. It is a bad institution. If you wanted to play pretend like we're in a fucking Hollywood movie and there's something we could do to make this country a better place, get rid of the Federal Reserve. You know, things started going sideways towards World War I almost from the moment that wretched institution was created. So we would be better off without it. If you come back with, well, damn, there'll be bank failures. Tell me, in my lifetime, how many banks have failed? They fail all the time. All the time. FDIC Friday. That's what it was, right? 2009 to 2014, FDIC Friday. With the list is coming out. This bank is failing. And you can say, well, Dan, it's not the same thing. We can insure people's accounts. Sure you can. You can insure their accounts. What you can't insure is that the money they have in their accounts will buy anything. You can't really insure for that. And if we end up in a scenario where a lot of that money that's been frozen up in investments and frozen up in CDs and whatever works of art, if a lot of that money that's been frozen in different forms, to include the value in people's homes, starts going on the run, then you're going to find out that hamburger is not just steak. Hamburger is fucking Wagyu beef. Hamburger, you're not going to be able to afford it. People like us, we will be happy we get to eat chicken once or twice a week if this really gets out of control. And that's in a best case scenario where you exclude the possibility that we are on the verge of a massive climatic shift. And it doesn't matter what caused it at this point. There's nothing that's going to fix it. I think the government, if it could fix it, has been trying. And if you want to research what that means, go to geoengineeringwatch.org. Go onto YouTube, search for Dane Wigington. That's your best source for that issue. I don't really feel the need to talk about it any longer. From my perspective, it's over. The only thing that stops the geoengineering is the fact that it's over. I don't mean today, I don't mean next week, but I would be very surprised, really, really surprised, and in a way, happily surprised. And I got to be honest with you, happily. I want to be wrong. But I'd be happily surprised if we get into 2027 and things are still sort of functional. because things are starting to move that fast. And folks, it could be the period. This is important. If you're a Christian and you have faith, it could be the period that's talked about in prophecy. That's what we could be seeing right now. Some people call it the quickening. You know, for people who are Hindus, they talk about different ages and epochs of existence, right? So there's another age coming. Who the fuck knows? All I can tell you is a transition from A to B won't be linear, won't be continuous. It will be cascading and brutal. And best case scenario, all the scenarios I can think of, with the exception of the miracles, right? The miracle scenarios where the hang glider lands on Happy, Happy, Joy, Joy Island, which is, it's possible. It's like that one in a trillion thing, but it could happen. But most of the scenarios involve famine. You know, if you think a major world famine is coming, even if it's not the worst ever, having something like the Iran conflict to blame makes sense. And at the end of the day, it also gives you that kind of Keynesian excuse to spend money, doesn't it? Because you just blew up a shit ton of stuff, right? You know, I did a couple podcasts in early 2020, like before the COVID really, really took off. And one of them had to do with this idea that a reverso Bastiat in the 19th century convinces upside down Napoleon III to create a force in France with the sole purpose of going around and just blowing shit up. You know, because, and again, this is the opposite. This is the opposite of the broken windows theory. You know, broken windows are bad. This is the argument, well, no, broken windows, that's money just waiting to happen. Reverso Bastiat. If you go into my archives, you'll probably find them. One of them is called ME 163 Day. It's a day in Seattle every year where they fuel up a special ME 163 with a 20 millimeter cannon, and it has extended range. So instead of flying for 8 minutes, it can fly for almost 30 minutes, and it gets to fly around Seattle with its cannon just blowing the shit the fuck up. And you say, well, Dan, why is that good? Because through that destructo force comes the Keynesian bullshit. Read your Krugman, understand that only through destruction can we create something new. Yeah. Because World War II fixed the Depression. That's one of my favorites, folks. World War II fixed the Depression. We were fed so many lies for so many years. And so before we leave Alan Greenspan behind in the rearview mirror, let me repeat this. He was one of the liars. He could have chosen a different path. It's possible that when he knew Ayn Rand, he saw the world correctly. And it's possible that somebody told him, especially after they closed the gold window, you got two choices. You can come along for the ride, and it's going to be a hell of a ride, you know. Or you can be out in the nowhereville with all the other weird libertarians and you know, and anarchists and freaks who talk about freedom. And you know what? You'll die poor. You'll die poor, Alan. You come with us, you're going to get an obituary at NBCnews.com. Oh, they didn't know about, you know, they had DARPA net. They probably knew where it was going. I have a link to a Daniel Davis deep dive YouTube video. It's one of these videos where they talk about consequences, and he has Colonel Douglas McGregor on there. And when you talk about edgelords, Dan, what's an edgelord? Well, an edgelord is kind of like a sheepdog, but they have more of an expiration date, which means that they specialize in certain subjects, Ukraine, the COVID, but they're not necessarily out there all the time or getting the focus. But these guys were talking about the Ukraine war before this, and they've latched on to the Iran war. And, you know, a lot of what they say seems based enough. I will repeat that these guys were maneuver commanders when I was a lieutenant in the Army in air defense. And it seemed to me that all these guys believed that there was no purpose to air defense artillery at the short range. I want to repeat that. They recognize maybe HIMAD needs to exist, although the HIMAD people, frankly, with THAAD and the Patriot missile systems, it was its own kind of monkey fuck. But at short range, they would repurpose air defense to other stuff, because bottom line, They did not believe they would ever need it. The Air Force had sold them on the belief, because we went up against some really bad pours, you know, we went up against Grenada, Panama, Iraq. By the time I got into the service, we had a long history of punching poor people in the stomach, and we drew really bad conclusions from that. It is a lot like the plot of Rocky III, if you want to break it down. You know, the reason why Clubber Lang can come along and kick your ass is because you played the second and third rate people. Well, that's what we did. And Iran, I'm not saying they're Nazi Germany in 1939. Frankly, Nazi Germany in 1939 didn't necessarily have the military you think they had either. But Iran is not Iraq. It's not Grenada. It's not Panama. It's not Libya. It's not Syria. It's not some two-bit country we can simply blow wind at and watch it topple over. I'm not saying it's good or bad. All the governments are shitty. These are all bad HOAs. Some HOAs are worse than others. You know, I think the Israeli HOA is, it's a lot like Yugoslavia. I would put Israel in the same category as Yugoslavia. It's one of these broken experiments from the 20th century that was never going to last. Never going to last. And like Yugoslavia, it's that little bit of vomit that came out of World War I. So there you go. But as edgelords go, they're not bad. Colonel Douglas McGregor talks about the worst case scenarios right now. And they're all kind of orbiting the whole really bad recession, or if the conflict spins up again, a depression. And all of this sounds great in the sense that if I still thought this was, you know, the kind of like the screwbilly scenario or the bank holiday scenario from March of 2020, I would say, okay, maybe, but I don't think so. I think that they're basically managing the discourse, the narrative for a lot of people towards a lesser catastrophe. And at this point, my best case scenario looks like a lesser catastrophe. It doesn't mean that my best case scenario is wrong or going to be fun, it'll be terrible. But if you have that scenario coupled with some major climate shift that is going to naturally punch everybody in the stomach, and it's going to make living on the planet difficult for years, if not decades, and perhaps longer, then exactly what do you do then? And it's not necessarily the end of the world. It's like Toba, you know? It's an event that simply wipes out most of us, not all of us. What do you do with that, you know? So yeah, Daniel Davis deep dive, if you want a lesser catastrophe conversation that is based. They're good based guys. I don't want to read too much of what I have here, but if you're not aware, there's an Ebola epidemic in the Congo right now. How serious it is, I have no idea. It's a lot like, to me, the Ebola thing is a lot like the Chinese murder hornet. It's a bad penny. And again, it could be real. It could be 100% legit. You know, back in 2020, I discounted the bioweapon. What I never thought about in terms of the great discontinuity was a fake pandemic. I should have. I didn't think about that. In part because of my own indoctrination. You know, military psychological warfare supports the mission. It's not the leader of the mission, okay? Never in military history has military psychological warfare taken control. Well, it did in 2020 in the United States of America. They were the king of battle. They were the queen of battle. They were in charge in 2020. So the Ebola story could be real. And like the boy who cried wolf, the 2020 event could have been softening. You know, the purpose was to be confusing, was to sort of create a lot of divisions and anger and gripes, but not necessarily anything functional. It wasn't designed to train us. It was designed to make it harder when the real thing hits. So I don't know what you'd say about the Ebola thing. Hemorrhagic fevers essentially work because the viruses reproduce at an extraordinarily high rate, and it leads to the cell membrane bursting. So yeah, it's gross. You bleed and you leak out of every hole, and it creates its own holes. So hemorrhagic fevers of all kinds, to include things like Hanta, okay? I think Marburg is also hemorrhagic. All hemorrhagic fevers are quite terrible. I'm pretty certain they're all viral. I don't know if there are any bacterial hemorrhagic fevers. Actually, some bacterial ones do create eruptions. So you could argue that bacteria have their own type of hemorrhages they create. But, you know, again, hemorrhagic fevers like Ebola are horrible because you bleed everywhere. Your cells simply start exploding. People do survive. And for some strains of Ebola, they supposedly have treatments. I can't tell you. I don't know how much of this you should invest any time in. Next topic. Dan, but you didn't talk about Ebola. I did now. Supposedly, in Europe in the summer of 2022, you know, what, 4 years ago? Supposedly, in the summer of 2022, 61,000 people died directly from heat-related illnesses. These are illnesses related to a temperature-humidity threshold past which the human body cannot maintain its temperature, cannot cool itself. So again, it's not as simple as the temperature. It also involves humidity. Simple way of putting it, the more humidity you have, the worse the temperature is going to feel. And this is what we know. It's like when people say, well, it's a dry heat. Well, dry heats are great because your perspiration works in almost an optimal way. It takes the heat off your body and puts it in atmosphere, and the atmosphere gobbles it up. So deserts are great places for things like swamp coolers, which simply depend upon water evaporation and the ability to blow to create your own wind. But the combination of water evaporation and some airflow, and you have yourself a swamp cooler, and swamp coolers can actually be very effective. You combine that with smart architecture, which we don't have a lot of in the Southwest, and you can build buildings that are capable of keeping themselves at relatively cool temperatures at a relatively low price. Not something we currently do for all kinds of stupid reasons, or maybe there's a reason, right? When you get past that threshold, the body begins to suffer. People who suffer from high blood pressure and cardiac issues can have strokes and heart attacks. Children can die from heat stroke. Old people can die from heat stroke. At a certain threshold, everybody would die from heat stroke unless they have a place they can go to get out of that threshold, the combination of humidity and temperature, okay? There are lots of places in the world right now where people are quite poor and they can't get out of it. There is no way. I was looking at a video about India where people are sleeping on the beaches. Why? Because they can't sleep at home. Their homes are too hot. The beach is the coolest place they can go to sleep. And that's part of it too. If you can't sleep and cool down at night while you're sleeping, that also is bad for your health. So it's not as simple as it was really hot today. If it also stays kind of hot at night, then that's not good, folks. I don't believe in fear-mongering. So if you don't think they're geoengineering and you live east of the Mississippi and you're convinced that your weather for the last 20 years has been the only true weather, then I'd say live in that world as long as you can. I lived in that world for a while. I remember living in Tennessee in the early to mid-2000s, I remember going back to Indianapolis in 2014. And I can tell you, it was nicer. It was actually more tolerable than it was when I lived there in 2000. The winters weren't so cold and the summers weren't so hot. And yeah, it took me a few years to really notice what the fuck was going on in the skies. And if you go back to that time, roughly 10 years ago, you'll find videos in my archive of what I took of the sky at the time from Riley Towers. I also think of the time I was facing east. So there's something about me facing east, folks. Facing east, not west, not the best. Facing east for the yeast. You know what I mean, baby. Yeah, facing east. There are things we can all do if we have the resources. Like if you have a piece of property, especially if you live out in the countryside, there are things you can do to create your own type of effects. Like you can actually raise netting to create a cloud effect, reducing sunlight exposure to your roof, to your house, to your home itself. If you have access to water, you can take advantage of the cooling effect of water. If you have the resources to sort of create that sort of not wind tunnel, but that sort of wind cave effect around your home to at least assist. I mean, there are things you can do that technically, if you have the resources, you can do. A lot of people just don't have the resources. Homeless people in general do not have the resources to do much when it comes to the heat. And it's going to be hard for a lot of homeless people if the summer stays hot. Here's another thing. Back in 2018, there were some significant forest fires up and down the West Coast from Alaska all the way down to Mexico. And it was like the sky was orange and brown every day for weeks on end. This is the Sky King summer. This is the summer that the mechanic went a little crazy and took the plane for a flight. Folks, I think those things are connected. I'm not saying Mr. Sky King was 100% on board with the sanity train. Clearly, he had stressors in his life. But another thing about heat is it can put people into psychological conditions where they act like a drunk and they make worse choices. You stop making good choices. It's a lot like dying of hypothermia, or cold exposure. At a certain point, you can start making really poor choices. And he might have been having one of those days where it was too hot on the tarmac, too hot working on the planes. And he said, you know what would be really cool? Like cool in the sense of just chill, cool. Take that plane up to like 10,000 feet. Yeah, so 2018 wasn't too good either. I was watching a French news special. Well, Dan, I'll discount it right there. You can. I was watching a French news channel, and they were doing one of these round tables, you know, with experts. And they were talking about, oh yeah, you remember the heat wave of 19, what was 76? 1976. That was scary. But they talk about the temperatures today and compare them to 76, and they all admit it's about 10 degrees warmer in general at the extremes. But they're having this conversation about whether French people should have air conditioners or not. And it seemed one of these strange conversations. It's like, you know, I don't know, folks. I can't tell you. I can't tell you what's going to happen next. The reality is, if you have the resources, there's a way for you to survive a heat wave. You know, you need to be able to cool your body down. You need to be able to have access to water and electrolytes. I know it sounds like idiocracy, but if all you have is water and no salt, you will die. So just understand, you need water, you need electrolytes, and you need a means to cool yourself down. If we have a lot of forest fires, that could actually cool things down, but that's not necessarily good because it creates its own kind of problem. And I remember in 2018, even with the forest fires, it was still kind of hot a lot of days and humid in Seattle. It was not pleasant. It was not a pleasant time to live there. Very little. And this is kind of important, folks. Very little in the Pacific Northwest was ever designed, either urban or rural, with the idea that we would need air conditioning. Homes, buildings, you name it. No one ever expected that. They didn't really fear designing a building because, all things being equal, it was better to design structures that absorbed heat than structures that reflected it. Whether it's the summertime shower or the wintertime gloom. And Western Washington never really got that cold either as I grew up, but it never got that hot. It never got so hot and humid in general that you said to yourself, "Why should I wish I had an air conditioner?" You just opened a window. If you needed mosquito netting, you put it up. You put a screen on the window and you opened it up. It was that complicated. So there's a lot about this people are not used to, especially boomers. And I would add X generation people. And if you're one of these people that got obsessed with a political question, oh my God, is this about what Al Gore said or didn't say? Then for you, this is kind of a taboo subject. You don't want to approach it. But I would change your perspective. This isn't about politics. And just because they're blaming the poor people, and that's what they've always done, doesn't mean they're telling you the truth. They have always blamed the poor people. I don't care if the pyramid fails. I don't care if there's no wheat this year. I don't care if Rome burns. Or the library at Alexandria. All things being equal, if they can find a poor person, Egyptian, Roman, Greek, and the like, if the elite can find poor people, people who are disenfranchised, if they can find the weakest and most hated in their society and blame them for it, they will. That's what they do. So before you take any of this personally and think it's about your truck or your hot dogs, well, understand a couple of things. That hot dog is now steak. Oh yeah, hot dog is now steak, I'm sorry. And you might not have fuel for the SUV, and it might have little to do with, you know, peak oil. That time could be coming too, okay? These are connected systems, folks. When they sold us on globalism and just in time, they convinced us it would be so much more efficient. And it is. It is really efficient. And people mistake efficiency as a kind of cornucopia. It's not. In fact, nobody wants to hear this, but the cars that get better fuel economy, they chew up the oil faster. Oh, no one wants to talk about that, do they? At the end of the day, it simply expands what people can do in terms of spending money and resources on a situation. Efficiency really doesn't keep people from doing stuff. In fact, all things being equal, efficiency incentivizes more usage, okay? It becomes more efficient to use the resource, you use more of it. At cheaper prices. So I don't know, folks. We'll see what happens next. Do not know, cannot tell you. We will see what happens next. I hope that we don't have terrible heat waves this summer, but there's already places where it's happening. I think on the East Coast, they're still generating a fair amount of make-believe weather. And so for people who live on the East Coast, you might still have temperatures that aren't so bad yet. But a lot of places in the United States are already seeing the effects of what long-term drought plus a heat wave can do. Barring a miracle, barring a huge miracle, and that means potentially a rapid shift in hydrology where the West is no longer in a drought, but in a long-term, really a long-term period of excess, let's say, precipitation. Barring a miracle, a lot of places in the Southwest will become unlivable, and it's not in the distant future. And it doesn't matter how much of their own pee they drink. If your electricity is coming from the dam, well, you still need water in it. It's not a magical machine. So you can drink less water, but at the end of the day, when the water's gone, you got no electricity, you're not going to be able to cook your pee, and you're done. You're donezo. Get out of Vegas. So I have a link to an article that relates to the Kushners in Albania. And I only mention this because I've been joking about how, you know, maybe people in the state of Israel are setting up safe zones in Albania. But it looks like the Albanians are fighting back. I have a link. There's an article. There's also a video. I don't know. It seems like they're not really hurting rich people like the Kushners in the video. They're just sort of pushing the shacks of poor construction workers down a hill. So on that level, it's classic divide and conquer. And there's really no protagonist you can latch on to. But the Kushner project itself has basically created a lot of conflict in Albania, so I thought that was interesting. Hikikomori. This article comes from SCMP, that's SouthChinaMorningPost.com, SCMP.com. And the title is, they're going to ask me to pay for it, so I'm not even going to pay for it. But you can find your own article. Okay, so we talked about Kotokushi last week, right? Kotokushi is dying alone in your Tokyo micro apartment. Your cat is hungry. Your cat is fat. Your cat looks like you, like your magical food. Your cat's gonna eat you. That, well, Kotokushi doesn't necessarily involve being eaten by cats, but if you posit a certain portion of Japanese people, mainly, perhaps mainly men, but probably men and women, die alone and their deaths are not recognized for months or years later, then if they have a cat, it stands to reason the cat's going to get food somehow. Hikikomori is about kind of shut-ins. Now you could say, well, Dan, aren't you hikikomori? I might be mild. I think of myself as basically a hermit. I don't really want to hang out with a shit ton of people, do a shit ton of things all the time. I don't really have a lot of friends. I have maybe one person within driving distance that I see every once in a while. But other than that, you know, I've got me, my family here, but I don't really have a lot of ton of extra friends. I don't feel a great loss over that or over the girlfriend thing. So it's, am I hikikomori? Yes, but that doesn't make me incel because I'm not involuntarily celibate. It's more like I just don't feel the need at this point. I don't have the resources, you know. It would be great if I did, but I don't. And what resources I have are being spent just to get through every day. And it's not just financial. Let's just look at this more closely. It's not just about financial resources. It's about emotional resources. It's about the extra energy you might have for somebody to talk to them, to be there for them. Well, along with Kotokushi, there's this other problem in Japan they're worried about called hikikomori, where basically people, I think mainly men, stay at home or stay shut in. They don't involve themselves in social lives. And it doesn't, and it looks like a lot of them, they either work from home or they don't have a job, but they essentially live with their parents until they're in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, or they just live very much a hermit lifestyle and, you know, all they do maybe is do a job, but probably from home, right? Well, I think this is a problem, hikikomori. I couldn't tell you if it is or it isn't. I know that in my case, I don't really have resources beyond the resources I have, which are barely enough to keep me afloat. It would be great to have the resources to do more. I would, for example, I would love to own a dog. I can't own a dog right now for a couple reasons. One, I'm not allowed to have one where I live. And two, I don't have the resources, the money for it. But it would be great to own a dog. But beyond that, more friends or even, excuse me, a girlfriend, and it becomes a giant question mark. It is June the 24th, 2026. It is almost 1:30 p.m. on the Olympic Peninsula. And it's been a nice afternoon to talk about the slicks, right? The animals, the beasts that you cannot see. They move 100 times faster than you or me. They're there, then they're gone. They suckle upon you for years, but it's only minutes for you. It's only minutes, and then they're gone. And then you suffer a great illness, and the doctors don't know why, and they tell you you're gonna die, but then you know, Kotokushi, you'll go back to your apartment with a big fat cat. Oh, Kotokushi, that's what you'll name your cat. Have a great rest of your Wednesday.